You're listening to Radiola.
Since they stole the spittoon from the corner saloon, now the folks can't go anymore. How they miss that spittoon at the corner saloon when they try to go as of yore. I spoke to bartender Juddy Geish, his floor is getting bloody, 'cause where it's set they're scrubbing yet, and Geish, he's getting sore. Since they stole that spittoon from the corner saloon, oh, the folks can't go anymore. There's a brown spot on it, 'cause his aim ain't what it used to be. Take old Abner McTamer, he was such a darn good aimer. Why, he could swat the old brass pot a coming through the door. Since they stole that spittoon from the corner saloon, now the folks can't go anymore. Hey, Grandpap, I heard you won first prize at the puttin' contest at the fair this fall. Would you step up here and show the folks that famous ball curve you won that puttin' contest with?
Boys, here she goes. Bullseye, Grandpap.
Well, we're back now with our third hour with collector Walter Mitchell. Walt Mitchell, actually. You go by Walt, not Walter.
Well, I am Walter when I'm signing checks, but well, usually I'm Walt.
Well, if you're signing checks, you can... That's okay, too. And I'm Andy Sr., but I never go by Andrew, so please don't write to me that way. And this is Radiola, and we're here in Oriskany, New York, not at Hamilton College. Oriskany, doing a special program of Walt's favorite recordings from his collection, some of his favorites, because I'm sure he's got a lot more than this. But,
you better believe it.
Well, I know we could spend, you know, about 6 years doing those.
Exactly.
But we're just having a great time here, and that was a hilarious record. What was that we just heard?
We just heard a group of what I would call Spike Jones wannabes. It really wasn't Spike Jones and his City Slickers. It was a competing group calling themselves the Corn Cobblers, spelled with two K's, by the way.
And they even had the cowbells in there. They really were taking his stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was like a Spike Jones tribute band.
Yeah, sort of. Although I don't think Spike was any too pleased with the competition.
Well, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery in this case.
I do like the song itself, though, since they stole the spittoon from the corner saloon.
But most of the women we know won't like it, but, you know, they'll just have to suffer through it.
Well, it's a bit crude, but,
well,
it,
yes,
but it isn't really.
As you would expect the rate, it would be. Yes.
It's not really that bad. And that was from MGM Records in 1947.
Yes.
Now we go back to the vaudeville era once again to hear one of the great stars of vaudeville, who was not only a performer but also a songwriter and a show producer. And I'm referring to the one and only George M. Cohan. George M. Cohan, as big a star as he was, had only one recording session in his entire life. And that was for Victor Records on May 4th, 1911. He recorded 10 tracks that day. Three of them were never issued at all, and 7 of them were quite poor sellers, surprisingly, which were out of the catalog within a few years after they were made. The one that stayed in the catalog for 17 years was the gloomy one he recorded called Life's a Funny Proposition After All.
Oh, yes.
Why that would have been
that's depressing.
Why that one would have been favored by people in the 20s and the teens, I don't know.
I'm surprised they didn't keep it in through the Depression because it was so depressing.
But here is, yeah, good point. But anyway, here is one of those rarer records, which is more typical of what he used to do. It's one of his great little patriotic numbers, and it's called I Want to Hear a Yankee Doodle Tune.
Always hated this overrated, pretentious music, complicated and compositions that have conditions, intermissions that please musicians, it's hard to hear it, just be near it, upon me word, I always fear it, I'm the original cranky Yankee popular melody fool, give us a tune that's worth the listening, give us a tune that's worth the whistling, I want a Sousa scream, instead of a Wagner pain, give the trombone a chance to blow in it, give us a dash of rag and go in it, what I'm stating is advocating the popular melody fool. By a military band. I want to hear a Yankee Doodle tune, the only music I can understand. Oh, Sousa, won't you write another march? Yours is just the melody divine. Now you can have your William Tell, your Faust, and Lohengrin as well, but I'll take a Yankee Doodle tune for mine. Give me the fellow who writes the mellow, contagious strain that's rather yellow. It may be hashy, it may be trashy, but still it's dashy, it gets the cashy. Really clever, it lasts forever. You hear it once, forget it never, for now we are coming to hanky-panky popular melody days. That is the music, there's no doubt of it. Cut all the cheap cadenzas out of it. Music to please the gang, with plenty of dip and bang. Music that all the children hum of it, all the composers' glories come of it. It's so ring, that's what's bringing the popular melody craze. Hey, I want to hear a Yankee Doodle tune played by a military band. I want to hear a Yankee Doodle tune. It's the only music I can understand. Understand? Oh, Sousa, won't you write another march? Yours is just the melody divine. Now you can have your William Tell, your Faust, and Lohengrin as well, but I'll take a Yankee Doodle tune for mine.
And that was the great George M. Cohan rattling off, I want to hear a Yankee Doodle tune, like a tobacco auctioneer.
It was like Gilbert and Sullivan or something.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Very close. It was a tobacco auctioneer doing Gilbert and Sullivan. Boone and a Mikado, I guess.
I wish I could have met George M. Cohan. I would love to have him autograph that record and some of the others that he recorded, such as You Won't Do Any Business If You Haven't Got a Band, and Hey There, May There. He also did one called P.S. Mr. Johnson Sends Regards. That is a comedy song that's a long one because it's on a big 12-inch record instead of a 10-inch as the others were. And now we move on.
Yes, here's another famous star who didn't record very much in the 78 era.
This guy comes under the heading of personality records just as George M. Cohan did. This is Georgie Jessel. And this was very early in his career, from August of 1920 for the Emerson Record Company. Here is Georgie Jessel singing a follow-up to the big hit song, Oh By Jingo. This song is called Jingabula Jing Jing.
That sounds like a cash register.
It does. It was not a big hit at the time, and it's not well remembered.
Ironically enough, yes.
And not well remembered today, but it's fascinating to hear the great comedian as he sounded in 1920. George Jessel and Jingabula Jing Jing.
jingaboola, jing, jing, jingaboola, jing, jing, all night long he croons to a Yakahoola maiden neath the Hickidoola moon. Jingaboola, jing, jing, jingaboola, jing, jing, morning, night, and noon. He was always serenading with a jingaboola tune. He set her loving heart aflame, then tried to say goodbye. And just before the parting came, he heard her softly sigh. Jingaboola, jing, 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 jingaboola, jing. When you're away, I'll be wondering how many more will hear you sing that loving jingaboola, jing, jing, jing. Now don't forget all you're promising. You say you're coming back to Honolulu with a ring. Maybe in the winter, maybe in the spring. To a hula hula, that's a lot of boola. Jingaboola, jing, jing, jing. Jingaboola, jing, jing, jingaboola, jing, jing. Though the clouds are gray, you can hear a maiden singing to her sweetheart every day. Jingaboola, jing, jing, jingaboola, jing, jing. When the moonbeams play, she hears wedding bells are ringing in a jingaboola way. She sighs up to the skies above each time his song is sung. I'm like his ukulele now, he left us both unstrung. Jingaboola, jing, 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 jingaboola, jing. When you're away, I'll be wondering how many more will hear you sing that loving jingaboola, jing, jing, jing. Now don't forget all you're promising. They say that Honolulu maidens wiggle when they sing. They can wiggle out of almost anything. They have had improvement on the suffrage movement. Jingaboola, jing, jing, jing.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed hearing Georgie Jussel singing in 1920.
Yes.
I showed that record to him 54 years after he recorded it. He was willing to autograph it. But when I told him that I had a tape recorder with me and a tape of that record on it and would be able to play the song for him if he would like to hear it, he replied, "Nah, it was pretty bad as I recall." But he was very kind. But he was a very kind man to his fans, and that was wonderful news.
Well, I'm glad he was. You know, he was. But the thing is, you said that you thought that that was the best recording of that song done.
That was what I did. I turned around his negative comment, and I said, "Well, you remember Frank Crummett?" He said, "Oh yes." I said, "I found Frank Crummett's Columbia record of that song before I found yours, and it did nothing for me." But, and that's not to say anything against Crummett's. I like Crummett's records. I collect Crummett's records. But when I saw the same song by you on a different list, I secured the record because I wanted to hear what you sounded like back then. And when I listened to your performance of it, the way you put it across, I like it. And he was happy to accept the compliment. Although when he first saw the record, he said, "They use these things for skeet shooting."
Well, I think a lot of people do, except you. You know, you and I are exceptional in that regard that we don't. But yes.
And now we move to a man who I believe was a friend of George Jussel. Certainly, he was a dear friend of Eddie Cantor, Al Jolson. Here he is with Carl Fenton's orchestra on a record made for Brunswick in 1926, April 23rd, 1926, to be exact. Jolson was identified by the descriptive phrase on the label as comedian with orchestra. Well, he was a comedian, but not here.
This isn't funny, but it's a rare record, though.
This is a much more serious song, and again, I'm so glad that I got a virtually mint copy of this one, which I will play for you now.
It's a very hard-to-find record.
Very much so. Al Jolson sings the popular song of 1926 called I wish I had my old gal back again.
We all have pals, we all have gals, from whom we drift for the years. Some we forget, and some we regret, after it's too late for tears. From the best pal I had, I strayed away, and how I regret it today. I wish I had my old gal back again. I miss her more than ever now. Though we drifted apart, there's a place in my heart just for her and for no other, right next to my mother. Gee, how different my life might have been. I've lived and learned a lot since then. There never was a pal like my old gal. I wish I had her back again. I wish I had my old gal back again. I miss her more than ever now. Though we drifted apart, there's a place in my heart just for her and for no other, right next to my mother. Gee, how different my life might have been. I've lived and learned a lot since then. There never was a pal like my old gal. I wish I had her back
Jolson with Colonel Fenton's orchestra. Actually, I believe Colonel Fenton was made-up name, and the guy who made up the name, if he wasn't conducting, he would allow the name to be used on somebody else's records for a fee.
Well, but, yes, it was a franchise.
But, I believe the man's real name was Gus Hanschen. German name there. Okay, now moving ahead to an example of what you can do with a song.
Yes.
Depending on how you do it.
Yes, this is interesting.
The song is called "Chances Are," but it's no relation whatsoever to the Johnny Mathis hit. It's a much earlier song of the same title. It was recorded here on October 8th, 1931, for Brunswick Records, by Art Kahn's orchestra, disguised on the label as the New Yorkers. So here is "Chances Are," with a nice clear vocal by Dick Robertson.
Thank you. chances are I'd be faithful to you. Chances are I'd be mindful to do all those things that would impress, till you'd confess that I'm your happiness. Chances are, if you'd let me implore, with my love you'd be asking for more. But sweetheart, before I go too far, tell me what my chances are.
Was nice.
Nice record.
Yeah, very nice.
Very pleasant. And it shows exactly how the song was supposed to be performed. But 6 days later, on October 14th, 1931, another group of guys got together in a New York recording studio, and they did a jazz version of it. And we have it here.
Oh, yes.
We have it here on the Clarion label, one of Columbia's dime store labels. And again, it's a disguised label credit. It says Roy Carroll in his Sands Point Hotel Orchestra. But actually, this is a studio pickup group under the direction of the famous trombone player Jack Teagarden. Jack sings a rather slurred vocal here. I have a feeling he may have had a few before the session.
You think?
And
maybe just to get to, you know, some people need to do that before they go in the recording studio.
But he wasn't but he wasn't so far gone that he couldn't play a really terrific jazz trombone solo.
Well, I think between he and Fats Waller were both, they're probably both are splitting it at that point.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Even if you knew Fats Waller by his sound of his records, but did not know that he was in this band, you could tell it was him
by listening to
that piano pounding. So here is Fats Waller, prominently displayed, even though he's not the leader of the group.
He's all through it.
And so here he is with under Jack Teagarden's direction, with a bunch of capable jazz musicians playing, finally for us, Chances Are.
Thank you.
last chord there, played on that great piano by good old Fats Waller.
Wow.
Jack Teagarden and Company on a clarion record.
And they were having a good time. Even if, they brought it into the studio with them, probably.
Absolutely. They did.
Yes, you know, it was, you know, in a bottle.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, next we turn to another of my favorite performers. Mel Blanc worked with Cliff Edwards on Pinocchio. He was the he is heard in the film only for seconds. He is the voice you hear hiccuping for the non-speaking cat, who was the henchman of the fox in the film. And he actually worked on the film for 16 days because the cat was originally supposed to be a talking character, but Walt changed his mind about that. So all that's left in the film of Mel's participation are those three hiccups. But when he was working on the film with Cliff Edwards as Jiminy Cricket, he couldn't say anything good about the man. I asked him, because I knew he'd worked with him, what he thought about Cliff Edwards. He struggled to describe how he felt about him. And finally, he haltingly just said he was not a nice man. Well, that's too bad, but I later told Mel that wasn't going to cause me to jettison my 36 Cliff Edwards records from my collection.
Well, yes. No, he might not have been a nice man, but he made some wonderful records. Of course, if you had to live with him, that would be something else. But
he had a fantastic, unique voice.
Yes.
I didn't think there was anybody that was ever going to be able to duplicate the sound of that voice. But a man named Eddie Carroll, who does an on-stage performance as Jack Benny, a one-man show, is absolutely perfect as mimicking Jack and also speaking as Jiminy Cricket whenever the Disney studio uses the character these days. He's been the voice of Jiminy Cricket for the last 25 years on the rare occasions when he's been used.
Amazing.
But here we have the great original, Cliff Edwards, in this relatively rare recording.
It is rare.
He is backed by a close harmony quartet called the Eaton Boys. And the song is from one of the films of the day, Love is Just Around the Corner. This is from the ARC recording group. This copy is the perfect record. Well, not all perfect records are perfect.
Well, there was sort of wishful thinking on their part.
Well, that's what it says on the label. That's what it says on the label.
And they didn't always have a mellow tone either.
Yeah. So from October 19th, 1934, here's Cliff Edwards, assisted by the Eaton Boys, really hot vocalizing on Love is Just Around the Corner.
Love's waiting just around the corner. Love's waiting just around the corner. Love's waiting just around the corner.
Say love is just around the corner, any cozy little corner. Love is just around the corner when I'm around you. I'm a sentimental mourner, and I couldn't be forlorner when you keep me on a corner just waiting for you. Venus de Milo was noted for her charms, but strictly between us, you're cuter than Venus, and what's more, you've got arms. So let's cuddle in a corner, any cozy little corner. Love is just around the corner, and I'm around you.
Love waits just around the corner. Love waits just around the corner. Love waits just around the corner. I'm just a sentimental mourner. I'm just a sentimental mourner. I'm just a sentimental mourner. Let's go and cuddle in a corner. Let's go and cuddle in a corner. Let's go and cuddle in a corner.
is just around the corner. Any cozy little corner. Love is just around the corner when I'm around you. And I'm a sentimental mourner, and I couldn't be forlorner when you keep me on a corner just waiting for you. Venus de Milo was noted for her charms, but strictly between us, you're cuter than Venus, and what's more, you've got arms. Say, let's just cuddle in a corner, any cozy little corner. Love is just around the corner, and I'm around you. Yes, I'm around you.
Great record.
Yes.
I love that.
Absolutely.
Yes, I don't care if he was a rotten guy. He made great records.
If you've got a good song and you have capable performers doing it, you've got perfection right there. So that was, again, Cliff Edwards with the Eaton Boys doing Love Is Just Around the Corner from 1934.
And now you're going to play something that isn't on shellac.
That's right. This is a cardboard record, friends.
Yes.
And there was a series of
records. And the collectors are already way ahead of you, but continue.
There was a series of records that were put out between 1930 and 1932 called Hit of the Week. And these records were one-sided because they were pressed on cardboard, and they were 15 cents originally, and then in the later part of their existence, the cost rose to 20 cents. And the unique thing about these records, aside from the fact that they played for 5 minutes on one side, is that they weren't sold in record stores. You bought them at your newsstand, where they appeared and changed each week. Hence the title of the company, Hit of the Week Records. Here we have the Hit of the Week Orchestra under the direction of
Bert. Well, we'll leave that in, don't worry.
Of Bert Hirsch.
Bert Hirsch.
And assisted on the vocalizing by the ubiquitous Scrappy Lambert. And the song called I'm Keeping Company. This is from July of 1931.
This is a new Dolium record, playing 5 minutes of continuous quality music, almost twice the playing time of the average record. And gave her the notion, and I'm keeping company now. Always said that I was the kind of a guy who would never wed, but the sweet romancing and glancing and dancing went through my head. I took her up to Ma, and she made a hit with Pa. I'm going steady, and I'm feeling weddy, and I'm keeping company now. Thank you. up one day in the merry, merry month of May. I was taken by surprise by a pair of roguish eyes, was strolling through the park one day. Keep company, happy as can be. I'm keeping company now. A new hit of the week at your newsstand.
And we want to make sure we go to the newsstand and pick up the next record next week.
Yes, along with your copy of the Literary Digest.
I think we went to
the
newsstand.
Yes, Collier's.
We're not going to find that
record.
Yeah, pick
up Collier's too while you're there.
We're not we're not going to find those records if we go over there now.
No, of course not, unfortunately. maybe it's true. That's a long record. That's five, and they had the pad that arrangement with interpolating different things and.
There may have been some comments about the length of those records because in their latter incarnation, just before the company went under, they recorded shorter versions of the hit songs, but added an additional number separated by a band. A band on the record, not a band on the instruments, where the same orchestra would play a little ditty that was in public domain so they didn't have to pay a royalty.
Yeah, it's usually college fight songs, or
right,
I have one with songs. La Paloma. And it's like one of those hot dance versions of that 1931 beat. I love that. I played that on the show recently.
Yeah, anything to just finish up the record. And that was a point also where they raised the price to 20 cents.
Yeah, so it was worth the extra money, too, to get public domain music.
Oh, sure. Okay, now we come to one of my favorite people.
Oh, yeah.
Rose
and she's still
Marais.
Very much with us.
Uh-huh.
She's still here.
Very much with us, indeed. And some people who aren't record collectors are surprised to learn that although they know her from Hollywood Squares, the top center square above Paul Lynde most often, and also as the fast-talking gag writer on the Dick Van Dyke Show, her career actually goes back to her childhood when she had an astonishing singing voice for a child. And this is my favorite of these examples.
And this is anthologized often. They have it. They've reissued this often, but this is actually, there's a difference between what we're playing today and what you might have heard before.
Yes. The anthologies give you the first verse with a fade-in from the intro without hearing the intro. And then you hear her sing the chorus, and then the music just fades away. But I have the original Brunswick record as recorded on April 22nd, 1933, where you hear the complete performance. Baby Rose Marie in Come Out Wherever You Are, conducted by the eminent Victor Young, and featuring in the last chorus a clarinet obbligato by a fellow by the name of Jimmy Dorsey.
Oh, yeah.
Come out wherever you are.
Yes.
I haven't even met you, except in dreams that are haunting me. Still, I feel you. I know I'm going to get you. No use in hiding away from me. moment we meet. Come out, come out, come out wherever you are. I spied you on the Milky Way. I spied you where the daffodils play. I spied you in your hideaway. Hi-oh, the merry-o, what do you say? Come out, come out, wherever you are. Behind the cloud, away up in a star. Come out, come out, come out wherever you are.
That's come a out, wonderful record. And
come out wherever you are by Baby Rosemary.
And she was amazing. I mean, that's a kid singing. She was like,
yes, yes.
How old was she? She was probably, what, about 11 years old when she made that record?
Well, she, most sources indicate that she was born in 1923, so and that would make her 10 years
about
old.
About 10 years, amazing voice.
Yeah, amazing voice.
Amazing voice.
In fact, when she started on radio, she was only 3. She was singing on radio when she was only 3
amazing.
Years old with that voice. And she went into vaudeville and went on the vaudeville circuit because people listening to her on the radio thought she was a fraud. They thought it was somebody trying to sound like a kid. They couldn't believe a little kid could have that kind of voice.
And those are the same people who thought Charlie McCarthy was a real person.
Well,
but the thing is, you actually met her and had her sign your copy of that.
Yes. It took me decades, but I managed to lay my hands on all 7 of the records that she made in the 1930s when she was a child and just becoming a teenager. And I saw her at the Hollywood Collectors Show. I brought those records across the country in a storage album so they wouldn't get broken en route. And for a fee, as they all do with those things, she signed all 7 of them. And when we got to come out wherever you are, I said, that's my favorite of all 14 of these performances. And she looked me in the eye and she said, mine too.
Yes.
I showed her one other record on the Variety label from 1937, where she sang a song called Heading for Heaven Down South, and she didn't remember doing it. I said, would you like me to put this on tape for you? She said, put them all on tape. And I'm true to my word, I filled the tape, sent along a playlist of descriptive information about the records, what I knew about them, and sent it off to her and got a nice 2-sentence thank you note from her back.
Excellent. Wonderful. This is Radiola, by the way. I'm Andy Senior. We're talking with Walt Mitchell and you've it's wonderful. And now we have, I consider this the gem of what you have today. Not in terms of rarity, but in terms of your connection with it and the story that you have to tell about it.
Felix Arndt was a young musician and composer in New York City. He was a brilliant man, and I had his records, and I wanted to know what he looked like. So I figured the only way I could find out at this late date was to write to the Performing Rights Organization, ASCAP. I figured they, of all people, would know where I could find photos of the songwriters of the day. And I was careful to specifically mention Felix Arndt because of my extreme appreciation of his great talent. And I got the letter back from the lady at ASCAP referring me to an archive. And what I didn't know was what was going on behind the scenes. This woman actually knew Nola herself, the woman for whom the song was written in 1915. And she took my quote out of my letter. She took a quote out of my letter and wrote it in a letter to Nola herself. We received a message. We received a letter from a Mr. Walter Mitchell of Oriskany, New York, which contained the following quote: "I would especially like to find a photograph of Felix Arndt, a charter member of ASCAP, and in my opinion, the greatest genius as artist and composer in the entire history of popular piano works." Unquote. I thought you would appreciate receiving this tribute to your late husband. Well, again, I didn't know this was going on until I got this mysterious letter from a man on Long Island. And the man on Long Island was a collector of Nola records and a good friend of Nola's for many years. He asked me if my interest in Felix Arndt was because of Nola, and he also told me that a brand new photograph of Felix Arndt was being printed, struck especially for me, an 8x10 glossy. So I wrote back and I told him, well, not just Nola, other things that he had written as well. And the upshot of it was, what with the correspondence back and forth, plus a thank you note that I got from Nola herself.
Yes.
The upshot of it was that in the fall of 1966, on a Saturday morning, I found myself on the bus headed for New York City to meet Nola. I had the record with me and that her husband had made of the song that he wrote for her. And when I got off the bus, there was the gentleman from Long Island standing there waiting for me. As he walked me across Broadway and down to the Abbey Victoria Hotel, he told me that we were going to have a nice smorgasbord buffet with Nola and visit with her in the dining area. We went in there, and there I was face to face with this wonderful woman. She was not only a brilliant music person of Felix's era, but she also was the cream of society. And I was almost going to be intimidated by her position, since my social status was much lower than hers. But I needn't have worried about it, because she was the gregarious kind of person who'd walk up to you, slap you on the back, and say, "Hi, how are you?"
Yes.
She didn't actually do that.
Well, but, no, but she would have.
But she was that kind of
person. She was that sort of person.
She was delighted to meet me, I'm happy to say. She was glad to sign the record. And the three of us visited for something like 3 or 4 hours, including the time we were eating. And not that we were eating for 4 hours, but you know what I mean.
Well, one,
and,
yes,
and,
I know.
And they were very surprised. They knew about this before I got there, but from the letters, they were surprised to learn how young I was. Praise of Felix Arndt, they figured I had to be somebody about as old as Nola herself. Or nearly so, but it turns out that there's this 21-year-old kid, and so that they got a real kick out of that, both of them.
So what was the story that about the composition of Nola?
The composition of Nola was that it was Felix's hobby, if you will, when he met somebody new, to write a little musical composition of what the person's personality reminded of him of in music. And the day that he first met Nola was when each of them had been separately engaged to a music event, which was put together to demonstrate a new type of flair piano. The minute he lays eyes on her, it was love at first sight. And they talked, and he asked if he could see her, and she gave him her address. Next morning, he was knocking on her door before she was even up, the door of her apartment, with this initial part of NOLA all written out. And because, of course, the lady was well-to-do, she didn't come to the door. The maid did. And the maid said she wasn't ready to receive any visitors yet, but he was welcome to sit in the parlor and wait for her, which he did. When she came in, he showed her the music. They went to the piano. He played it for her. And before she knew it, she was Mrs. Felix Arndt.
That's amazing.
And they had a marriage made in heaven, but it wasn't to last because poor Felix was caught up in the terrible flu epidemic that swept the country and much of the world in 1918. He died in October of 1918 at the age of 29. He left behind 3,000 piano rolls and a couple of dozen records that he had made. And NOLA was so crushed by this that she never remarried. And
and she could have. She was a wonderful lady.
She could have, because she was indeed a wonderful lady. And at the end of the meeting, as we, the man and I walked back to the subway where he was going to take me out to his home on Long Island to look at his record collection, he said to me, "She's got class." I said, "How old is she?" He said, "That's a secret. I can't tell you." I said, "Fine, let it be." I finally found out how old she was, because at the time she died, I was reading Variety, and I saw the obituary. And it turned out that when I was talking to her, she was 77 years old. And you couldn't ask for a nicer lady. And that's my story about Felix Arndt and how the song came to be created.
And that was wonderful. And now, let's hear the record. Felix Arndt.
Felix made this record on March 30th, 1916, for Victor. Let's see you playing Felix Arndt's NOLA like this. Thank you. And that was Felix Arndt in the first issue of NOLA from 1916.
That was actually take three, though.
It was take three. Take two was the one that NOLA actually signed for me, but that record contains a defect. As Felix is playing it, the sustaining pedal squeaks every time that he pushes his foot down on it, and you can hear that squeak on the record. So they had him do it over again after the piano had been worked on, maybe a few days later, and the third take was the one that you just heard.
And it's just so amazing to realize that NOLA is a real person, was a real person.
Absolutely.
And you got to meet her.
And now, to close this program, first of all, again, I want to thank you, Andy.
Well, Walt,
thanks
so much. I want to thank you. This is a wonderful, wonderful stuff and wonderful stories. And Walt Mitchell, has been a friend of mine for a long time, and lives in Oriskany. We're doing the show in Oriskany today, and I'm Andy Senior. This is Radiola, and I want to thank you so much for participating today. I've had a wonderful time with this stuff.
Well, I've had a wonderful time displaying the collection. I'm very proud of the collection.
Yes, and this is just like a part of a fraction of a sliver of your whole collection. You have how many records, by the way?
Pardon me?
How many records would you suppose you had?
Maybe 30,000.
Oh, is that all?
It might be more.
Probably is more.
I have not taken an inventory lately.
Well, if you could take an inventory, you probably have more than that now, too. But now that's a lot of records.
Now we close the program with the man who led the Peerless Quartet in that rousing rendition of Swanee. Here he is, more in his normal venue, backed by the Victor Orchestra, Henry Burr, on July 20th, 1926, sings this beautiful love song, and I think that this is the only record he ever made, and he made thousands of records. This could very well be the only record he ever made where he hums for part of it. So here he is, Put Your Arms Where They Belong, sung by Henry Burr.
I dreamed alone till arms unknown embraced me and held me so sweetly. Thrilled by your touch, they taught me much, and now I'm yours completely. They brought me love in a night, 'twas a love that is called love at night. Comes to me when I'm fondly caressed.